What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Kelly Fennell. Kelly is the premier ESOP consultant, having been consulting on ESOPs to business owners for over 40 years. He's an attorney. He is an AIF. He is an author. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie, then got into the types of business owners that are a good fit for an ESOP, what ESOPs actually are, how they work, who they benefit, how they're actually administered, how much they've changed over the 40 years that Kelly's been working in this space, and that and a lot more. Obviously, we then close with a dynamite difference-making tip that will help you to determine if an ESOP is a good fit for you and your organizations. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Kelly, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Well, I'm an ESOP consultant and have spent the last 44 years in the ESOP business. So I'm going to give you three things about ESOPs.
Okay.
The first is that private equity generally pays more to a seller than an ESOP in a liquidity transaction. The next one is an ESOP-owned company operates tax-free like a church or a synagogue. And then the final one is if an owner sells to an ESOP, the owner is going to continue to run the company the way he had in the past and make all of the major decisions.
All right.
This one is a lie.
This is well done, because not only, it's not just some trivial stuff. This is related directly to your work and to our conversation. So I feel like we're already winning. Let's see. PE firms pay more for companies that are ESOPs when they buy them. I believe that that's probably true. If an owner sells or sets an ESOP up, not much changes. That's probably true too. Tax exempt status. I think that that's the lie.
You got one right.
Ah!
So it's very easy to understand why you would think that there's no way a for-profit company can operate on a tax-exempt basis like a church or a synagogue. That has to be the lie, but it's not. Mm. And it's not a loophole. It's something that's been in the law for over 25 years. It's not something that is a secret from Congress or from the IRS. The largest ESOP-owned company in the country is Public Supermarkets. Hmm. So everybody knows what they are doing for their 300,000 employees and beneficiaries and what they're not doing for Uncle Sam. Publix doesn't pay tax. So it competes very well with Kroger, because they're in an industry with razor-thin margins. And if you can get that advantage of not paying tax, it gives you a huge pricing advantage. The other things that you see at Publix is their employees are super helpful and super motivated. And the reason for that is they are owners of their company. So they're going to get compensation packages with pay and bonus, just like everybody else. But on top of that, when they get ready to retire, they're going to have a piece of the action. And so they're going to receive a great compensation and benefits package and a great payout at retirement based on the equity interest that they have in the company.
That sounds like a real win-win right there, Kelly.
Yeah. And so the lie is that in 43 years, I've never seen an ESOP not pay more than the best bid that company ever got from private equity. So again, that's very counterintuitive. Everybody assumes that private equity pays more, but they don't. And the reason that they don't is apparent. A private equity fund is an alternative investment strategy. So you have very wealthy people who invest in the normal things, stocks and bonds and liquid investments. But once you've reached a certain level of wealth, you want to invest in alternative investments. You might limit your investment in those to 5 to 10% of your portfolio. You're taking a higher risk with those investments. And so you expect a higher return. And so private equity is serving two masters, the owner of the company that they're purchasing, and on the other side, the investors who are providing the capital that they need in order to purchase these companies. And so the revenue that the company generates, the profits that the company generate, is going to have to serve both of those masters, the seller and the investors. With an ESOP, there's only one master, and that's the seller. There is no counterparty. There is no investor that's scraping a piece of the profit off. All of the profit is there and available to pay for the ESOP debt and then to benefit the employees who participate in the plan.
This sounds awesome. Why don't more people do it? Or maybe lots of people do it.
That's a great question. More people are doing it now. But there's been a huge challenge with ESOPs over the years. There's a lack of information. Most people know about the three standard liquidity strategies. A business owner can sell to private equity, they can sell to a strategic buyer, or they can die with their boots on. And so almost everybody knows about those options. There is far less information available about ESOPs. On top of that, there's a good deal of misinformation about ESOPs. And so one of my missions over the last 40 plus years has been to spread the word. I'm an ESOP evangelist, spread the word and help people know what ESOPs are and how they can benefit them and correct the misconceptions that are out there.
Did you get into the business 40 years ago, right when ESOPs were started, or how long have ESOPs been a thing?
ESOPs have been a thing since 1976. And so in 1979, I had just finished my first year of law school, and I was working that summer for a firm in Massachusetts, and they had gotten a letter requesting that they write a white paper on this new thing called ESOPs. Been in the law for 5 years. And all of these experienced pension lawyers looked around at each other and they said, I don't know anything about ESOPs. Let's give this job to the kid. And in 1979, I was the kid. And so I spent that summer researching and writing about ESOPs, came back to law school, did everything that I could in terms of selecting classes that would help me with this career, got out of law school in May of 81, took the bar exam in July of that year, and started my company in October.
Amazing. So that summer research, you uncovered some pretty compelling things that caused you to know this was the track that you wanted to be on.
Absolutely.
And are those still the same today? How much has the world changed?
You know, the ESOP world has changed quite a bit in terms of the ESOP practice. The law around ESOPs hasn't changed all of that much. The types of business owners that are attracted to ESOPs hasn't changed all that much. But the way ESOP transactions are processed has changed over the years. And so I'd say there's been a moderate amount of change. You know, it would intuitively cause people to think, well, it'd be more interesting if things did change and you had the challenge of keeping up. But ESOPs are unique. I've been, in addition to doing ESOPs for a while, I was involved in the 401k world on top of doing ESOPs. And that is a world that hasn't changed and where everything is static. It's very difficult to add value for a business owner in a 401k plan because the IRS rules are so stringent and inflexible. And the rules around ESOPs are just the opposite. There is unlimited flexibility and opportunities to add value through creative design. And so, you know, if you have the knowledge and if you have the experience and if you're open to doing things differently and being driven by the goals of the client, you have great opportunity for the ESOP world to be very interesting and to always be new and different based on what the client's trying to achieve.
Nice. Well, that is a compelling reason to stick with it for one's career. So, what are these types of business owners that are attracted to ESOPs?
They are what I call compassionate capitalists. So they are people who want to do well for themselves and their family while doing well for others. And those others are their employees. And so I have this thing that I've developed over the years called the greed scale. And on one end of the greed scale is Mother Teresa. And on the other end of the greed scale is Gordon Gekko.
Perfect.
And so in order to be a candidate for an ESOP, you don't have to be Mother Teresa, but you can't be Gordon Gekko. And so most of our clients fall into this category that's in between these two extremes that I call compassionate capitalists. So they want to get paid full fair market value for their company, but at the same time, they want to protect their employees from the ravages of private equity. They want to tie their employees to the company and give them an additional performance incentive. And they want to reward employees for past service. And so those are the kind of business owners that are attracted to this planning strategy.
So it's the companies that actually have a great place to work, not just are recognized as a great place to work.
Well, that's exactly right. And so oftentimes when I'm introduced to a new company, I look at their website and they've received all of these awards for being the best place in their town to work. And on their website, it also says, our values and our company culture drive our success. So I know immediately that that's the kind of company I'm looking for.
Which makes a ton of sense. All right. So I imagine that there are an unlimited number of reasons that you've heard, and some are valid and some aren't, for why people aren't interested in doing this. What are some valid reasons that a company would not do an ESOP?
Yeah, there's several. The first is the company's too small. And so in order for an ESOP to be attractive, a company needs to be of a certain minimum size. I say that ESOPs are good for small companies to mid-sized companies, not so good for micro companies. And so my theoretical guidepost there is a company needs at least $2 million a year of adjusted profit. And as a rule of thumb, they need to have at least 35 employees. So if you have a micro company, if you have a company that has $500,000 a year of profits and 15 employees, they're not going to be a good candidate. An ESOP is a form of internal succession plan. So in order to succeed, the company has to have a strong successor management team. You're not selling to a professional buyer, you're selling to your employees, and those employees need leaders in the future. And so you need to have a strong successor management team. I sometimes say that the best candidate for an ESOP is an owner who comes in late, takes a long lunch, and leaves early. He's delegated the operation of his company to that successor management team. So he knows that when he leaves, they're going to be able to carry on. And you need a company that where culture is important and where the owner wants to take care of his people. And if you don't have that, if you have a business owner who wants to take the money and run, probably not a good candidate.
It sounds like it. Well, that is I really appreciate the example of somebody who comes in late, takes a long lunch, and leaves early because they are probably a smart operator who has learned to delegate effectively. And
Exactly.
well, I love everything about that. Okay, so I bet sometimes it seems like an awesome idea, and then it gets in place. What are some reasons that people are disillusioned or are unhappy once they've done it?
You know, we don't see that very often. If you look at surveys, something like over 60% of business owners that sell to private equity have buyer's remorse and regret their decision. You almost never see that in an ESOP, but we do see situations where after a period of time, the company decides that the ESOP is no longer appropriate for their situation. I had a friend and business owner who I had done an ESOP for 20 years prior call me and say, "Kelly, I hate to tell you this," he said, "but I think we need to get rid of this ESOP." And I said, "Johnny, that's fine." I said, "You did not make a lifelong commitment to the ESOP." And I said, "You guys have had lots of changes in the business." And I said, "I think you're right. I think the ESOP has served its purpose. And now it's time to do something else." So we don't see that many sellers that regret or are disillusioned after they've done an ESOP. But we do see perhaps 5 to 10 years later, they decide that a different approach might be appropriate based on the company's situation at that time.
Fair enough. All right. So I don't know if it's possible. You've highlighted how one of the attractive aspects of an ESOP is that it's highly customizable. But can you walk us through a plain vanilla? Here's what actually happens when an ESOP is put in place, like what happens with money and accounts or stuff like that, just the mechanics of it.
There are two key parties involved in the ESOP transaction. You have the business owner who's the seller, and then you have an ESOP trustee who is the purchaser. And so ESOPs are usually financed with three sources of capital. So the company goes to a bank and borrows money, which it then relends to the ESOP. So that's one source of capital, that bank loan. The second is many of our clients are companies that have excess cash that they don't need for operations. So they put that into the ESOP. And then the third component of financing is seller debt. And so the owner takes back a promissory note. And so now we have these three sources of capital, and the ESOP trustee uses that capital to purchase stock from the owner. And very often it's 100% of the owner's stock. So now you have the ESOP trustee holding the stock, and you have the business owner who has cash that he received at close from the bank loan, but he's also holding a seller note. And of course, the bank wants to get repaid. So what happens each year is that the company makes contributions to the ESOP, just like a company would make a contribution to a 401k plan. An ESOP is a form of retirement plan, like a 401k. It's a first cousin. And so the company makes contributions. So employees don't fund the cost of the stock that goes into their account. It's funded by the company with a big assist from Uncle Sam. Right. If you have $1 million, if the company has $1 million of debt service, then Uncle Sam is pitching in 40% of the cost. And that just considers federal tax. In some states, the Uncle Sam is pitching in over 50% of the cost of repaying this debt. And so that's what happens over time. The transactions financed, the company makes contributions to pay off that debt. And as that debt is repaid, shares are divided up among the employees' accounts. Over time, as the company grows, it becomes more valuable. The accounts of these employees grow. And then when they have a distributable event, such as they quit or they retire, they receive the value of the stock that's in their account, and they get that value in cash.
I love it. And people obviously like that.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And you can put whatever kind of investing schedule that you want on those shares, or as soon as they're deposited in the employee's account that they own them, or how does that work?
There is almost always a vesting schedule, but you are restricted by what the IRS allows. And so what most vesting schedules look like is a 6-year graded vesting, which means that after the second year, an employee's 20% vested, with an additional 20% each year thereafter. And so after 6 years, the employee's account is 100% vested.
Got it. Excellent. And the first two ways that it's funded is the bank loan, internal cash. So as soon as that initial transaction is complete, the business owner receives the full value?
The business owner receives the value of those two components of capital. The third component is the seller note. And so he receives the seller note. And then while the company is paying off the bank, the company pays him interest only on his seller note. And then once the bank's repaid, the company can either pay off the seller note, or more often what happens is the company goes back to the bank and they said, wow, that worked good. It was good for you because you're in the business of loaning money, and it was good for us. So we want to do a second tranche, a second loan, and we're going to use the proceeds of that loan to pay off the balance on the seller note.
Well, that sounds like a pretty cool thing right there. I understand why you've been doing it for a long time.
It's very fun. And the most gratifying part is to help a business owner execute the most important financial transaction of their lives, while at the same time, seeing how much the employees appreciate what the owner's done for them. If an owner sells to a third party, there's no employee appreciation. It's good for the owner, but he's the only one it's good for. If you're a compassionate capitalist and you want to do well for yourself while doing well for others, then an ESOP can be a great solution.
Love it. Well, Kelly, you've already given us a lot, but we are ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us, sir?
I would just encourage business owners to consider all of their options, just not the standard options of selling to private equity or to a strategic buyer or dying with their boots on. Do some research and consider your options. A great place to begin that research is our website. Our website is not a sales pitch. It's educational materials about what an ESOP is and how they work. You can find a link to three articles that me and my partner wrote for tax journals. On our website, you can also find a link to the book that I wrote. It's the only book out there written for business owners about ESOPs. Most of the books that are written about ESOPs are for lawyers and CPAs and investment bankers. But this book is written specifically for business owners in their language, full of charts and illustrations. So educate yourself. You can go to ESOP industry websites that National Center for Employee Ownership has great educational materials. Their website is nceo.org. And the ESOP Association of America has some good educational materials as well. So business owners, I hope, will be open to all of the potential planning strategies and will educate themselves about the least known and least understood of those strategies, which is the ESOP.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets it. Come on. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on. Give us the website that people can find you.
www.execfin.com.
And what's the name of the book?
The ESOP Coach.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Kelly your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good business and certainly that compassionate capitalist in your life who cares about their success as well as the success of their employees and their clients and everybody else. Go to execfin.com, execfin.com, and pick up your copy of The ESOP Coach. And educate yourself and find out if this is a viable option for you. And then, of course, reach out to Kelly and have that conversation. And I'm sure that he would be thrilled to do that. Thanks again,
Absolutely.
Kelly.
Thanks so much, George.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.